through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you don't parry. Yo, baby, what's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the cops on the looters and pie throwers. They call it class war, I call it co-conspirators. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through that Starbucks window, you left me all alone, all alone. In awe at the red, white, and blue on the 4th of July. While those fireworks were exploding, I was burning that fucker and swinging my black flag high, eating the peanuts that the parties have tossed you in the backseat of your father's new Ford. You believe in the ballot, you believe in reform, you have faith in the elephant and jackass. And to you, solidarity's a four-letter word. We're all hypocrites, but you're a patriot. You thought I was only joking when I screamed kill Whitey at the top of my lungs, at the cops in their cars and the men in their suits. No, I won't take your hand and marry the state. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through that Starbucks window, you left me all alone, all alone.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay, hello listeners, you're listening to The Circle Day on Resonance 104.4 FM. I bring anarchism to you from the anarchists themselves, or from libertarians, or from friends of anarchists. 2 weeks ago, Simon from the Albert Camus Society was on, and he was publicising Ashes and Diamonds Theatre Company version of Caligula. For this show, I want to focus on Camus and association with anarchism. So maybe you can help with that, Simon.
Yeah, I'll try. I'll do my best.
Okay, then. So I'm going to start. Camus was interested in anarchism. When did his interest begin?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer. So it's good that you've opened the show with it. Put me on the spot a bit. Camus, throughout his career, didn't overtly write down any sort of political program. He was definitely centered towards, or veered towards, the left, and he definitely had sympathies with various anarchists and anarchist movements. He submitted material articles and whatnot for various anarchist magazines and publications. He also gave money and donated sort of funds or whatever for anarchists that were in trouble, who were destitute or needed assistance for court cases, or for anything they needed money for, really. But he did, which is something we'll get on to, he did criticise some anarchists, and Bakunin was one of them, and we're going to get on to that. But he was sympathetic towards the anarchist movement.
Sympathetic,
yeah.
In a genuine way.
In a genuine way,
to the anarchist cause. Well, I mean, freedom, I don't know, that's really what... That's,
I mean, if you read through his politics, and through his just through all of his general works, then you'll see that he shares many sympathies with anarchists. But there's many different types of anarchists, so
yeah, exactly, yeah, syndicalists,
Syndicalist, definitely. He supported. And but on the other hand, he could be accused of being a statist. I mean, he seemed to favour a kind of liberal state. But then again, he never wrote down any sort of political philosophy. He stuck more to a kind of religious sort of ideas, but from a non-religious perspective. So he's several steps sort of backwards, looking at more sort of abstract things, and then but when he turns himself on to something political, such as writing about various injustices, then he would have no. I don't think any anarchist would have any argument with what he was doing, or even many communists or people on the left, and even people who were in the centre. I mean, he was in a way apolitical.
Okay, all right. Can you talk about the play, The Rebel?
The book, The Rebel.
The book, yes.
Yeah, well, what specifically shall I talk about The Rebel and Bakunin, or just The Rebel in general?
I guess you can mix it up, the two, yeah.
Okay, then basically, what Camus was trying to do with The Rebel was he was looking at... first of all, he looks at the human response to injustice, which he says is to rebel against injustice. I mean, Camus differed with... I mean, he's often lumped in with sort of existentialists such as Sartre and whatnot. But although he was an atheist and he did write things that were along an existential theme, he differed from people like Sartre, etc., in the fact that he believed that there was a human nature. And part of his belief in human nature was that he said that humans naturally are sort of outraged, passionate about, sort of forced into action whenever they see injustice. We have a strong sense of injustice. And I mean, it's something that he shares in common with Rousseau. I think it was Rousseau who said that even the worst kind of prisoner who's done something really terrible and he ends up in prison, if he sees a woman outside holding a baby and a wolf coming to snatch the baby out of the woman's hands, he will feel terrible because he wants to get out of the prison. And some animals too have this, sense. I mean, there's like a squirrel will run past other squirrels that are in trouble, which makes them easy to catch. But they're cunning, but that's a... They're difficult to catch, but at the same point, they're easy to catch because they don't have... like, if there's a squirrel trap and a squirrel sees a squirrel's been trapped in that trap, he will happily run past that squirrel and then get trapped himself because in his animal brain, he doesn't feel any sort of repugnance at the sight of an injured squirrel.
Oh.
Whereas a horse will rear up. Like, one of the reasons when jockeys are in a horse race, if they fall on the floor, they curl up into a ball, and the other horses won't step on them, or hopefully won't step on them.
Yeah.
But it's a bit difficult in a horse race, so people do get kicked. And this is a long way around going, that there is in some animals a natural sort of repugnance at suffering. And
it's consciousness.
Yeah. And the human animal... which Bakunin was very keen on, that said that there's no difference between humans and other animals in terms of what we are. We're a type of animal. And
exactly.
The human animal has a natural disgust or repugnance at injustice. And Camus believes that there is a human nature, and there is this... and this is his starting point. I mean, he wants to start The Rebel from a position of saying, right, I don't know anything, I know nothing at all, like Descartes did all those centuries ago. He says, I don't know anything, and then I'm going to try and see things that I can know for sure. And one of the things he says that we can know is that all human beings, or most human beings, have a natural sense of outrage at injustice. And he builds on from here. And what he's trying to do is examine in The Rebel whether this sense of injustice that we have, if our rebellion against it, if it can continue to overcome the injustice without things getting out of hand. And he says that people like the communists, but also the Nazis... I mean, the thing, his critique of the Nazis is quite simple. He says that they've seen the world, they've seen the injustice in the world. They said there's nothing we can do about it. It's just survival of the fittest. And so we're going to group together in a band and we're just going to kill everyone else. And
that's right, yeah.
And it's just a sort of an absence of value other than this idea of survival of the fittest. And that's actually easier to critique than the communists who, and we mean the state communists by this, the sort of communists that Camus could see around him in the various communist parties.
Yeah.
Sort of, he got involved in the communist party in Algeria, then he was kicked out of that, and he wasn't too upset about being kicked out of that. He wasn't that interested in it. Mm. And what he's seen in Soviet Russia, he said that these people start off with a natural sense of injustice, they rebel, and then this rebellion just eats itself, basically, yeah, and ends up in the fight for liberation becomes terrorism and state terrorism, and then there's the gulags and prisons and executions, all in pursuit of this justice. And what he wants to do in The Rebel is to say, is it possible to tease out of rebellion a kind of moderation so that we don't end up just killing everyone who gets in our way when we're trying to solve this problem? And towards the end of the book, he talks about the nihilists in the Russian nihilist movement, and he moves on to Bakunin. And what's interesting is that Bakunin, he also, Bakunin suffers, as Camus suffers, it's something we can get onto, with people caricature what he was talking about. And if you ask just the average person to give to briefly sum up what Camus is all about, or briefly sum up what Bakunin's all about, what you get is a caricature that doesn't reflect the true philosophy of Camus and what he was all about. And the same with Bakunin. I mean, Camus is seen as a sort of daydreamer who just sort of shakes his fist at everything and says, oh, there's nothing we can do, but we should just rebel against it, and it's all a hopeless cause. That's nothing. That's the complete opposite of what Camus was trying to say. Bakunin is seen as someone who just wants to smash everything and destroy everything, and he's seen as a sort of violent blowhard, almost a fantasist, and this is the way that he has been treated by others, and that's the opposite of what Bakunin was all about.
Yeah.
If you read his works, well, as much as you can, because he didn't actually publish anything while he was alive.
Yeah.
If you read what we have now, you can see that what Bakunin was interested in was the same thing Camus was interested in, and that is getting rid of the excess that happens in rebellion. And people accuse Camus of being excessively saintly or excessively idealistic.
Yeah.
And people accuse Bakunin of being excessively sort of violent or excessively destructive, whereas in reality, the people that Camus was criticising, their approach, the communists, but also the established church as well, their approaches to the problem of the world and of injustice was excessive. That's something we can go into. Bakunin, his critique of Marx was, he says, he's excessive. The thing that he's trying to do is excessive. And that's something that the two have in common, Camus and Bakunin. And what's a sort of contentious issue is Camus' treatment of Bakunin in The Rebel, because Camus didn't actually read any work actually by Bakunin. He read works, secondhand stuff that had been written by other people.
Yeah.
But also, to be fair, what Camus is trying to do in that section of The Rebel is not give a biography of Bakunin and not to sort of lay Bakunin's ideas out, but deal with one particular event or relationship, and that was Bakunin's involvement with Nekiev, a violent nihilist who was a very unpleasant person, and was the exact kind of thing that Camus was against and trying to avoid. But also, unfortunately, it was the exact kind of thing that Bakunin was trying to avoid, yet Bakunin found himself caught up in the mystery of this person and never really got over this involvement. So that's such a long answer I've given you. I can't remember your original question.
It was about the rebel.
Oh yeah, it's a good book, you should read it.
Yeah, no, it is a really good book, and I haven't read it yet, I confess, but I will. And yeah, I mean, from so what, to reflect back on what you said, so basically, like, Camus was trying to highlight, talk about, like, what would happen after, say the people that have faced a lot of... Well, that's my take on it anyway. I mean, I don't know if that's what intended, but, like, for me, what I've... Like, it's quite thought-provoking, so what I'm thinking now is, like, so say there's, like, a group of people that have faced a lot of injustice and they want to, like, finally get some justice, so they would do that, and then what next? Kind of... It's like, well, does that person... And did those people end up... attacking, going on an attack, but I don't think that necessarily has to happen personally.
I mean, well, the thing is that it's difficult to say in individual circumstances what because the rebel isn't a blueprint of what we should do. I mean, the thing about Camus is that he was accused by others of being a kind of saint. They said, oh, he was what he wanted to be was a moral saint, whereby he was just sort of perfect and he wouldn't bloody his hands or dirty his hands with anything, because he would say, oh, this is a moral to do this and this is a moral to do that, and you can't kill him and you can't kill them and you can't do anything. And this is nothing what Camus was actually like. I mean, one of the things that really annoyed the left at the time, I've got a cough. One of the things that annoyed the communists and or the Marxists at the time was that people read the rebel as an argument to sort of fall short of revolution, to fall short of actually seeking justice. So they didn't like the way that Camus was talking about moderation. I mean, the thing that Camus was trying to moderate isn't a revolutionary urge, or isn't the desire to seek justice. What he's trying to moderate is the extreme nihilism and violence that has been pursued by others. But I mean, this isn't how it was. He was using a difficult choice of words, and if you're not very sympathetic to what he's trying to say, then you're not going to pick it up as you read the book. But Camus wasn't sort of against violence. I mean, he was involved in the resistance in the French resistance of the Second World War. He knew that people died and people had to be killed. I mean, if you look at Caligula, which is the play coming up, I mean, Camus clear that the character that sort of expresses Camus' views is Sharia, and this is the guy who kills Caligula at the end by stabbing him in the face, and that's an important thing that he does stab Caligula in the face, because Camus says that basically when you go to kill your enemy you should look him in the face.
Oh, yeah.
when you're going to do it.
Yeah.
don't hide in the background and just order the deaths of people as if it was nothing. You should face up to what you've got to do. And if you look at all of the deaths in that occur in Camus' works, they're always somebody looking face to face at the person that they're going to kill. And Camus, he wasn't a pacifist. He was against capital punishment, but then capital punishment isn't ordered face to face. I mean, the person who's the one he sentences the condemned man or woman to death doesn't pull the trigger. The people who argue for capital punishment, they're not going to be the ones who actually have to bloody their hands. I mean, that was the thing that Camus was accused of, the not wanting to bloody his hands, was the very thing that he was accusing other people of. I mean, you had Sartre, who was basically defending Russian gulags and saying, well, they're necessary on the way to achieving the answer we want, or we have to oppose capitalism, and so to do that we have to support Soviet communism, and if that means that we've got to support some of the executions, the midnight knock, the gulags or whatever, then that's just something we have to do.
Mm.
But that isn't actually getting your hands dirty. That's just refusing to engage with the subject. Now, the controversy over the rebel was one of politics more than anything, because the thing that really annoyed Sartre and the others and the Marxists at the time is that they said that Camus, who they thought was one of them, they said his book could be used by conservatives and people on the right or people in the sort of moderate liberals. They could use it to sort of be anti-Marxist or anti-communist, whereas what Camus was against was a sort of Stalinist communism. And it was Camus' refusal to sort of play a political game that left him completely isolated, or he had support but he was on the outside of the main group, and then he could be shunted off to one side. Now, that's the exact same thing that happened to Bakunin. Bakunin was, at the time when you got the First International, there was Marx was presiding over it, as Sartre was presiding over the sort of left in France in the 1940s. And he didn't want Bakunin and the anarchists to sort of muscle in, basically, on his... into his group. What he was, well, to be fair to Marx, what he was worried about was that if you have a group of people who've got a declared aim, which is the sort of socialist or communist or whatever at the time, if you allow other groups into that group, then that's a recipe for factionism and for splits. And he wanted everyone to be focused in the same sort of group. Now, the thing with Bakunin is that he had his own sort of group come with him. And so Marx was worried that there could be a sort of Bakunin faction on one side and a Marxist faction on the other. There would be a kind of split and then everything would be disintegrated and there'd be nothing left. I mean, ironically, Bakunin had no interest in splitting up the group, although he wasn't politically minded, which is a good thing in the way that Camus wasn't politically minded. He wouldn't play games and not say something that he wanted to say because it would damage him politically, and say things that people wanted him to say that would help him politically. And when the game playing started with Bakunin, Marx played every sort of card that you could play, every sort of dirty trick. I mean, it was suggested that Bakunin was a Russian spy, which was would not only get him isolated from the rest of the group, but could possibly get him killed as well.
Mm.
They suggested that he was a bully, for example. And there was, it was complicated because there was the Nekiev connection where... basically, Nekiev was a bully and he was also a murderer. And they took the bad sides of him, and they let all the dirt from Nekiev stick to Bakunin, and then they said these two are the same kind of person. We don't sort of want them. There were other games that were going on as well, like arranging meetings where it would be in a location that most of the Marxists could make it, but very few of the anarchists could make it. And then you've got a power imbalance within the group, and all these little things were going on. But when people said to Bakunin, "You've got to try and do some dirty tricks back," he would just flatly refuse.
Mm.
He also was very sort of honest. I mean, he didn't like Marx, and the two people were incompatible. I mean, when they met, they were friendly enough, but they really didn't get on with it. I mean, Bakunin was a very sort of outgoing guy, very sort of gregarious. I mean, when he entered the room, all the attention was focused on him, whereas Marx was—he wasn't like a sort of party animal, They really didn't sort of get along with each other. Yeah, but basically, Bakunin consistently—he would—he would have a go at Marx, especially Marxism, but he would also add that Marx had made a massive contribution to sort of revolutionary thought, and that his work in Capital was an amazing contribution.
Yeah.
And he wanted to, well, he did translate it into Russian. Mm. Which was a really, really horrible task to do. And it took him, because Capital's huge.
Yeah.
He could only do about 10 pages a day.
Yeah.
And he accepted in advance to do it. And when it was really getting him down, Nekiev sent a threatening letter to the people who were publishing the book, basically saying in this letter, yeah, you're going to get killed if you don't just let him keep the advance and tell him that he doesn't have to do it anymore. Which Bakunin was obviously against this kind of thing, but he did have this relationship with Nekiev, which is at the heart of Camus' criticism of Bakunin.
Yeah. Specifically, what are the ideas that Bakunin and Camus shared, do you think?
Well, basically, they're both... What they both want is an authentic rebellion. They want there to be an authentic justice. They want the path from the unjust world now to lead directly to the just world, if that's possible. But what they won't do is surrender to another idea, whereby someone would say, we can go from A, which is the unjust world, to C, which is the just world, but we've got to go through B, and that's where we arrest and imprison half the world, and we kill children and enslave their mothers and blah, 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 because it all leads to the utopia at the
paradise.
End of it.
Yeah.
Bakunin at the time, the people he was struggling against were the ones who wouldn't reject the idea of the state. They said there has to be the apparatus. Basically, we've got a capitalist system and we've got the state. And what we need to do is keep the state but overthrow capitalism, and then we'll have a communist state. And then once we've got this state, eventually everything will work itself out and we won't need the apparatus of the state anymore. Bakunin said this was impossible. With Camus, people were saying what we have to do is break. It's the old you can't make an omelette without breaking eggs. So they're saying we can have this. We can have this. We can have justice or an authentic life, but we're going to have to break a few eggs along the way. And Camus was against that. I mean, they're both people, Camus and Bakunin, who won't agree to do the wrong thing in order to possibly get the right thing. That's what they've got in common. And this alienated them. The only difference between Camus and Bakunin is that Camus's gone on to actually have more popularity than the people he was fighting against, whereas it's the opposite. Hardly anyone's heard of Bakunin, they've all heard of Marx. More people have read Camus's books than all of his rivals put together.
Wow, that was really an informative show. Thank you very much for coming on and, wow, yeah, cool.
Just talking.
Yeah, that was good. Thanks. Okay, well, that's all, folks. You can listen to this show again on other shows on by Dissident Island online on Catalyst Radio. The Circle Day is on Fridays at 9 p.m. on there. And if you go on YouTube, you can watch the music video for the intro and outro. Who it's by JD, and the song is called Baby I'm an Anarchist. Okay, till next week, turn on, tune in, and kick off.
Through the best of times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you're dumping your baby. What's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the